Are you familiar with a man by the name of Robert Owen, who lived in the 19th century? He actually had a debate with one of our preachers on the subject of the existence of God. And one thing that Robert Owen was known for was seeking to set up a town in America that was strictly socialism. And it failed. It just didn't work. Because there were people who came there who figured, well, if others will do the work, I don't have to do it. And he just thought that if he could have a town where there was no religion or any of the other things that you and I think make America a great place to live, he thought if he could eliminate all that, he could show right in the heart of America that it's possible to have paradise on earth without all these other things that you and I try. And his experiment failed after just a couple of years. I like to read Henry David Thoreau, and I've read Walden, which is what he's most famous for, and I learned a lot from it. But he was looking for paradise in a certain way, and what he did in living in this cabin by himself on the edge of Walden Pond, back east, he wanted the world to see just how you can live simply. You don't need all the stuff that we think we need for life. And he was right in that regard. And yet, for some reason, he only did it for 2 years. He didn't continue to live that way. I even wonder sometimes if the founding of America, and you all know that I love America, but I wonder if the founding of America is really a quest for paradise. I mean, why did people come here before we were a nation and then after we became a nation? Why are people right now just pouring over our southern border to get here? Because this seems like paradise to people who live in situations that you and I find maybe hard to believe. For example, You know that I went to Russia and so on. I had interest in evangelism there, and I had to quit going only because my kidney disease got worse and I just didn't have the energy anymore. But before I went, there's a professor at OIT, Oregon Institute of Technology, who helped me write letters in Russian to certain people in Russia, obviously. And then when I would get letters from them, he would translate them for me. And so I had a lot of talk with Michael Spector. And at one time in our conversation, I was at his office in a second story by the Klamath Falls Airport. And I asked him, Michael, do you miss Russia? He got up out of his desk chair, walked over to the window, and so it's facing the airport, and he said, this is paradise. He didn't mean Klamath Falls or even Oregon. He meant America. And he absolutely loved living here. And I don't know if we understand how blessed we are here. I hope this doesn't sound crude or embarrassing to me in any way, but if I can use Russia as an example again, we finally land. I get in Russia finally. After a Russian guard stole my pin from me, I said, welcome to Russia. I then went to use the restroom. Now, you know something? You can go anywhere in America. You can go out into the deep desert of eastern Oregon and find toilet paper at a rest stop. This is Moscow, Moskva, international airport, capital of one of the former superpowers of the world. And I realized I was in trouble. And somebody before me had mercy on me and left some toilet paper for me. And I didn't have any to leave. I felt sorry for the guy who came after me. Is having toilet paper even out in the desert a sign of luxury and a sign of paradise? Well, yes, in some ways it is. You know, I can go on and on with stories like that, and you probably could too. I just think even when America has a bad economy, most of the world would say, we'd love to have your bad economy. One more illustration from Russia. As we were going to a baptism one night, because we would have to do it at the city pool in Murmansk, Russia, this one Russian woman that I was walking with and my translator, she said through the translator something about America. I wish I could remember what her question was. But it had to do with how conditions were in America. And I kind of indicated to her that that there's problems here. It's not perfect here. And she laughed at that. And when I was there a little bit longer, I can see why she laughed. Because what we think is bad is still far above what they experience over there. And, you know, she told me that all of the images they have of America are of good things. And I'm thinking, what good images do they have of America? How do they get images of America, especially after the Soviet Union collapsed? Here's one way. One night as we were in our room, we turned on the TV, and Dallas, the soap opera, came on. Of course, you know, if you go back and watch those, they're constantly drinking heavy, you know, strong drink. And so I was like, oh man, I don't want Russians to think that's all that we do, but that's not what they see. What they see are gorgeous people, thin, trim, living in a spectacular place. And you and I don't really think that much about that. Because maybe we don't quite live like that, but we're close to it in their minds. Okay? But again, we know, because we do live here, that once you get here, it's just not perfect. And while America is, in a lot of ways, a paradise, America is not going to last forever. Communism is an attempt by man to establish paradise on earth. And man has it failed miserably. How come North Korea hasn't fallen yet? I don't know. And when we seek materialism, we are seeking to build paradise on earth. Read the book of Ecclesiastes, and in the first couple of chapters especially, Solomon will tell you what he did. He'll tell you that with his wisdom that God gave him, he used that to build beautiful things. Gardens or parks. He planted trees. He had water all over the place. He made paradise there in Jerusalem. But what happened to it? It's gone. And look at it today especially. Now, there has been paradise on earth before. When God first created man and woman, Adam and Eve. Think about it. Before they sinned, and in fact, some of the things I'm going to mention here were still true even after they sinned. But here's two people who had the whole planet to themselves. Wow. That's amazing. They had dominion over the entire planet. They had a rich supply of food. They had such ease and comfort that they were naked. I mean, these were adult people, naked, and they're not embarrassed. And I gather from the biblical story that if they hadn't sinned, and then they have their children, and their children didn't sin, they would have grown up and they would have been dressed the same way. And so would it have continued until somebody sinned, I guess. And we don't understand that, do we? You know, that's so far removed from our way of thinking. There was no criminal element. There were no pressures of any kind. that I can see. Can you see any pressure in there except that God said that one tree over there, don't eat from it. But you can have the run of the garden and really of the whole earth. So I don't really think that was any pressure. And they had face-to-face fellowship with God. Wow, what was that like? I mean, you know, after they sinned, that God Himself was walking right there in the garden. And He came to talk to them. Wow. I don't know how to describe that. But of course we know it wasn't good enough. You know, God gave man an inch and He wanted a mile. And so it was lost. Turn in your Bibles to Psalm 8. Magnificent psalm. The opening verses and the closing verses are identical. Praising the Lord for how excellent His name is. But I want you to keep in mind that when David wrote this psalm, he wrote it after God had already cursed the earth because of Adam's sin. He wrote it after God has already destroyed the whole planet with a flood. And yet, he could say this, verse 3. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower, than the angels, whom we have the temptation to want to worship. And you have crowned him with glory and honor. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea. In other words, even after Adam's curse, even after Noah's curse, the fact that God cursed the earth at both of those times, man was still the apex of creation. Or to use David's word, the crown of God's creation. How magnificent that must have been. But then now, if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, you learn that things changed. And they changed in a very simple way. But I want you to notice, as we read this familiar text, what was going through the mind of Eve after the serpent tempted her. Genesis 3, starting at verse 4. Then the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat of it, the fruit that grows on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." Now watch what Moses said. So when she saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And old Adam, standing right there, joined in. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. Now, wait a minute now. I mean, look what she's thinking. Well, this is good for food. Although Genesis 2, about verse 9, says, you know, that God had made all these other trees for food. Here in 3:6, she noticed, well, it was a nice looking tree. There's nothing evil about it. It looks wonderful. And Genesis 2:9 says that about the rest of the God's creation, concerning the trees especially. They were all beautiful to look at. Who doesn't like looking at trees? And she's thinking to herself, wow, if I eat from this fruit, I can be like God, knowing good and evil. It wasn't good enough for her to be able to talk to God Himself right there in the garden. She wanted to be God. It wasn't good enough to look at all the other trees. For some reason, she was hanging around this tree. And it wasn't enough that God had just filled this garden with all the food they needed, and as well as the rest of the world. So here we are today. However, the Lord, as we know in the Scriptures, did provide the prospect of a somewhat new paradise, the land of Canaan. For many generations after Adam and Eve, God promised to a man by the name of Abraham that his descendants, after they've been in a foreign land for about 400 years, He would bring them back and they would live in the land of Canaan. And what is one of the descriptions given in the land of Canaan? It was a land flowing with milk and honey. You know, before I was a reader of the Bible, I always heard that expression used in reference to America. And then I learned, well, that came out of the Bible. Because we believe that God has blessed our land and thus made it a type of a paradise. But, of course, before Israel could get to this wonderful land, they had to be slaves in this foreign land. They had to get caught up at the Red Sea with the enemy right behind them, and then God takes them through the Red Sea. They had to go through the wilderness and then eventually cross the Jordan River and finally get into the land and conquer it. So although it was a paradise, it wasn't just handed to them. God had given it to them, but still there was a lot they had to go through. Now go to the book of Hebrews. Because we all know that, of course, eventually the land of Canaan was not the ultimate or final paradise. Because Israel sinned, God, one time after another, over many centuries, sent foreign powers in to oppress the people, to get them to turn from their sin. And they would turn from it for a while and be faithful to Him. But finally the point came where they just would not turn from their sins. So He sent the mighty and brutal and extremely cruel, some of the most cruel people in history, Assyrians, against the northern part of Israel and took the 10 tribes into captivity. Judah followed the example of her sister Israel and refused to repent of their sin, and so God eventually sent the Babylonians against them. Took them out of their land. It wasn't paradise anymore. How much blood has been spilled in the land of Palestine? I think it's just amazing. When you go through the Bible and just see what it says, and of course it's not telling you about all of history. I mean, there's times where 120 might die in a battle in one day. But when you come into Hebrews, and you come into chapter 4, the Bible uses the land of Canaan as a type of the rest, or the true paradise, that is coming. And you'll read this in verse 8. For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day. You see, in chapter 3, you can go back and see that the Hebrew writer quoted from Psalm 95 several times. And he spoke about rest. Even in the book of Psalms, he spoke about a future rest. But if Joshua, the successor of Moses, had given Israel the true rest, he wouldn't be still talking about another rest to come, the Hebrew writer argues. Therefore, verse 9, there remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. That's us. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. Well, you know how precious retirement is, those of you who have retired or are close to it. There just comes a point where you're just tired of working. Your body's just wearing out. You're tired of the routine. You look forward to some rest. And you don't mean just rest this coming weekend. I mean, you want to be off work for good. And God knows that. But of course, we don't ever retire from our Christianity. And if we do work, he says, then you'll have this great, fabulous rest in which you can rest even as God did from his rest, as is recorded in the book of Genesis. Verse 11, let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. So really, what is our time here? My first exposure to the word pilgrim was in elementary school, and you know, I thought that was the group of people that came over from Europe into America. And then later, the word shows up in the Bible. I start reading the Bible. And then I realize we're all pilgrims and sojourners. You know, there's a big deal about being natives, isn't there? Just today, as we were driving home after the potluck, I saw a car that had a bumper sticker, and it didn't just say native, it said wild native. Okay, so I'm better than you are if I'm born in Oregon. You may have moved here, but I was born here. Somehow there's some kind of special something or other that's conferred upon you if you're a native. But when you read the scriptures, you learn that, well, really, yes, we were born here on the earth, but this isn't our home. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. And look what is said about the great patriarchs. It's very important that we see this. Maybe I should get a bumper sticker to put on my truck that just says, pilgrim and sojourner. You may be a native, but I'm a pilgrim and a sojourner, I'll admit it. Verse 8. By faith Abraham, when he was obeyed, when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Remember, he's 75 years old when he's doing that. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Well, hadn't God made the earth? Yes. But the Bible also says in the book of Psalms that God has given the earth to man. And look what we do with it. So there was Abraham right there in the land of promise. But even while he's there, he realized that really wasn't his true home. No, he wanted to go to the city that had been built by God himself. While he lived on the earth, even as we do, we see cities, but these are all built by man. What does a city built by God look like? 13, verse 13. These all died in faith. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, and others. Not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed what? that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. I wish somehow we could get the people living in the land of Israel today, and I don't mean just the Jews, but anyone living there, that all was just a type of the true paradise, of the true rest. You don't have to be killing each other over what you think are sacred sites. Instead, kill yourself, and I don't mean that literally, die to yourself, that you might live in the ultimate sacred place, the true Jerusalem, which is up above. 14. For those who say such things, in other words, those who confess that they're just strangers and pilgrims here, declare plainly that they seek a homeland. This is not my homeland. I love living in Oregon. I've lived here for 31 years. And of course, I love living in America. But this really isn't my homeland. 15. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, if Abraham had thought more about Ur of the Chaldees, then he would have had opportunity to return, the Hebrew writer said. God wasn't forcing him not to go back. God hadn't put up a roadblock. If he just said, God, you know what? I'm up there in years. I like the life that I have here. Find someone else. I'm going back to Ur. He could have done it. That's what the passage is saying. 16. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. Wow, isn't that magnificent? Isn't that beautiful? Turn now to 2 Peter chapter 3. Because what I want to show you now is that paradise will be regained. We will gain paradise. The earth, though, is going to have to be destroyed. So we can't expect paradise to be on this earth ever. And remember what I've told you the word utopia means? You know how we will talk about a place being utopia or utopian? The etymology of the word utopia, that means the history of the word. I couldn't believe it when I looked it up in a dictionary. I've got an old Webster's dictionary in two volumes about that big. And it tells you what the root meaning of the word is. You know what utopia means? No place. I couldn't believe it when I read that. In other words, whoever came up with that word, was that the one that wrote Robinson Crusoe, I think it is. I think that's where it first appears, if I remember right. And of course, the idea of being shipwrecked on a deserted island, I mean, that sounds so romantic, doesn't it? But I think the writer, and his name will come to me about 3 o'clock this morning, and I'll start calling all of you to tell you who it is. I think he was trying to tell us this place doesn't exist.
Robert Louis Stevenson.
Was that Robert Louis Stevenson that wrote that? Who?
Jonathan Swift?
Okay, now I'm getting all confused, so we'll figure it out. But anyways, you know, the earth is going to be destroyed. So look at verse 10, 2 Peter 3:10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with great heat, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. And if that's the case, how then should we be living right now? Verses 11 and 12. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? The answer is in the question. Looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Well, I need to be found in holy conduct and godliness. Therefore, verse 13, we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Oh my goodness, I can't wait for that place. So the qualities Adam and Eve experienced in the garden, we can experience. Remember, I showed my class this morning that Paul was caught up, he said, into... Well, he gave two names to it. Secondly, he called it the third heaven. Or no, the first time he called it verse 7. And then the second time he called it paradise. He said he was caught up to paradise. In Revelation 2, verse 7, Jesus told us that if we overcome, He will give to us to be able to eat from the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. A paradise that God Himself has made. Or how about this in Revelation 22? Listen to this. Revelation 22, the first two verses. And He showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. It's not just that the tree of life is there, meaning one tree, but that passage tells us that in the middle of the street and on both sides of the river, it's just lined with the tree of life. And we get to eat from the tree that Adam and Eve could have eaten from. When confronting the issues of life, remember that life will never be a paradise here. But we can overcome and then find ourselves in the true paradise someday. But wait a minute, Don. If Adam and Eve lived in the perfect place, and they didn't have all the temptations that we have, and they still sinned, and thus ruined paradise, isn't that possible that that could happen later when we get up there to the true paradise of God? No. And I'll tell you why. First, because right now we're on probation, so to speak. That's what this life is all about. Are you ready for heaven? And then secondly, again, look at the book of Revelation. Look at chapter 21, verse 27. But there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles. Oh, praise God for that. Or causes an abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. It won't be possible for someone to go there and defile it. They can't climb over the wall. They can't dig under the wall. They can't bash in the gates. He said, it's just, there's no means that they can come up with to try and get inside. All people who defile things and ruin things will be kept out, he says. The only ones who will be allowed to enter into it are those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And they've demonstrated by their lives here that although they have sinned, they despise their sin, they don't like it that they have sinned, and they've sought the Lord's forgiveness when they did sin. Look at chapter 22, verse 15. But outside are dogs and sorcerers and sexually immoral and murmurers and idolaters and whoever loves and practices a lie. So that ought to give us all assurance that God has made it in such a way that paradise is restored and no one and no thing could ever ruin it. So then, yes, let's make life here make it as best we can. We need to do that. That's what loving your neighbor is about. It's making life good here. But if that's really what you're devoted towards, then God will bring you into the ultimate paradise. I realize this is just an illustration, and no one has actually seen this, but I think it'll illustrate the point. Who's going to be in heaven and who's not going to be in heaven? I heard a preacher illustrate it like this one time. Everyone will have their arms with a brace on so that they're straight. And they'll come to sit down in a meal and they'll have utensils. The people who will be in hell are going to be trying to... Their whole time they're just going to be frustrated trying to feed themselves. And the people in heaven will scoop the food and give it to the person next to them or in front of them. See the difference in the attitude? That's what it's all about. So if you want to become that person who thinks about others rather than only thinking about yourself, and or if you found yourself with your thinking all twisted up and in the wrong way, you know, let us help you if we can. I know we're not God, but He did say that we can pray for one another. And that's what we want to do for you tonight. If we can pray for you tonight, for you to get closer to the Lord, that you and I and all of us together might be in paradise together, then tell us about it. Come forward now as we now stand and sing.